check session number 16344, reel 4.
Miss MacDonald, reel 4.
Right, yes. We're stationed at Custina, and which is not far from Gaza, Tel Aviv up the road, as we would say. And our job was to ensure that the roads were kept clear, because these different terrorists was laying mines on the road to disrupt the progress of what was going on at that period in time. With coming from Normandy and over the Rhine, etc., to us this was just a simple operation, because we wasn't encountering the things which happened in that period in time in Normandy and over the Rhine or the Ardennes. So in actual fact, to some of the men, it was just a piece of cake, we'll call it a piece of cake. There's not too much to tell about Palestine, really. Only as I repeat myself, just to ensure that everything was kept in order. Any problem starting, all they had to do was just buzz up and the troops would be there in the flash. But we didn't encounter too much problems that way. The only thing which we did happen once, some of the chaps had gone down into Tel Aviv, and two chaps was on their own, and one of them got his eye kicked out by some Jewish gangs, which in turn, even although it wasn't really discipline, some of the men got the wagons, the trucks, and went down and backed into a load of the shops to let them know that we wasn't having anything like this again. As a matter of fact, one of the officers, I think he was with the artillery side, he only quoted that if it happened again, he'd possibly set the guns on, but he was sent home for quoting such a thing. That's the story that we've been told. He told the mayor or whoever it was, he told them that he'd opened the guns on them, these 17 pounds, whatever they were at the time. So when it came to the ears of the hierarchies, he was just shipped home for saying such a thing when we were trying to keep everything down. But it was very annoying, because when you went into anywhere, you weren't allowed to take your weapons, you see. And so consequently, this gang of Jews routed these two and kicked all the hell out of them, and one in turn lost his eye through it. So it upset everybody, that.
Did you know this man?
I couldn't tell you his name, because he wasn't in our squadron, you see. No.
So, as far as you were concerned, were your duties in Palestine like an infantryman or as a sapper?
As both, actually, both. Because where they couldn't cover, we covered. See, we guarded a perimeter, and then the infantry was in another section, so it was well cut. What it was, to space troops out to, if anything happened, they could be there in a flash. The only thing was that with these, one in particular, he was a sergeant with us, he was called Adamson. He wasn't my sergeant, but he was in the squadron at 591. As time went on, he had the chance to become officer and pass, which was very unusual in them days. And when we was due for coming home, he was out that day going up the railway lines, because they had the old Bayan rail, it is. It's a little unit which you can put on tracks, and up the rails you can go. Or we did have some jeeps that you could change the wheels and put railway wheels on to go down if you had a long distance. Anyway, unfortunately, it was only about, I think it was a week or so before we came back to England, they was going down inspecting, looking for, and this booby trap had been hidden. Of course, he got blown up and he was killed. So that were really upsetting, because we knew him from way back, and we thought he'd done so well to get into officer rank and become a first lieutenant, not just a second lieutenant, you know. And that was, he was going to make it his career then, because we said at the time, do you think you did the right thing by going in for officer rank? Because there was always a little bit of them and us type of thing in the situation like that. But anyway, being in the paras, it didn't seem to work that way like it did in other regiments, because it happens in regiments. If a man's come off the ground floor, we'll call it. He's not one of the clan in a lot of ways. I suppose it's not as bad today, but it was then. So unfortunately, he lost his life. But from there, after that, of course, we came back to England, came back home to a place called Luggersall, which is on Salisbury Plain near Bulford area, and it had been an American camp. And so we were really glad to get back home. The only thing was, it was snowing really hard, and I was wanting to get home because I was married before we went, and we hadn't seen one another for 3 years then. So when we got to, I got to Manchester from Bulford. They kitted us all out with the heavier equipment for the winter. And when I got there, they said, oh, there's no trains running to Glossop, which was about 14 miles away. So after being so fit and the exercise we had, I would have run the 14 mile anyway. And so one of the porters quoted, oh, there's a train going to Guybridge. Well, that was halfway there. So when we got to Guybridge, they said, they've opened the line further on to Dintin, which is on the way to Sheffield, but that's only a mile from Glossop. So when we get to Glossop, I thought, well, I'll walk up the railway line, because being on the railway from when I was young, I knew the routine. But they said, oh no, if you go down by the sidings now onto the main road, there's a bus waiting. I thought, great. So I just picked my kit bag up and away I sailed down on. When I got on the bus, I was smoking in those days, so I just lit up and there's the driver smoking away. So there was only another guy got on with me, so he still sat there. So I said, oh, I said, there's no more getting off the train now, you know. I said, can we get going? He said, well, I haven't finished my cigarette yet. I says, oh. So what I did, I left my kit bag there, got off the bus, and I was just opening the driver's door and getting in the driver's seat when he come running round. And he said, we knew this guy after, didn't we, Mick, he was called. And he says, what the hell do you think you're doing up there? I says, well, if you won't finish your cigarette, I've been away for 3 years. All I do is want to get home to my wife, okay? I said, so you sit in the back and finish your cigarette and I'll drive the bus up to Glossop. No, no, he said, I didn't mean anything. So anyway, I got out and he got in. And he never forgot that, because we used to see him years after, and he always used to say to all the guys, you know, this is the guy I told you about who was going to drive the bus. Well, this is him, eh? Oh, dear. And that was the homecoming. Anyway, I got home, and as it happened, there was a dance on. So it was only about, you had to get your tickets nearly a year in advance to go to this special police ball. And the wife knew that I wouldn't possibly be home, and so she'd gone with her friends anyway, you see, which I told her, while I'm away, carry on dancing, don't sit in morbid. And so when I got home to her mother's house, Bert, who'd been in the Navy, that's the brother-in-law, oh, he said, I'll go and tell her she's at the dance. I said, OK, right, because I didn't want to go, I was tired. So anyway, she came home and that was it. And in between me being in the forces all that time, she'd managed to get a cottage up in the hills, and she'd got it all together, nicely done and clean and everything. And so away we sailed up to our house then. So that was my homecoming. Yes.